Tune in the new fall edition of the quiz show hit, Take It or Leave It, even more exciting than before. It stars Bob Hawke and is presented by the makers of Eversharp pens and repeating pencils every Sunday night. The Human Adventure.
As a regular feature in its series of year-round broadcasts in the public interest, the Columbia Broadcasting System, in collaboration with the University of Chicago, presents the 41st chapter of The Human Adventure.
The story of Middletown. The story of a real American town and how university scholars wrote its history on the sidewalks of Main Street.
Another chapter in The Human Adventure.
This series of broadcasts represents the work of universities. The Human Adventure presents to you the exclusive accounts of research in all fields of science and scholarship. A university's job is to learn the nature of things that you and all mankind may benefit from its knowledge. So that this knowledge may reach all America, this series is broadcast over the Columbia Broadcasting System in collaboration with the University of Chicago over Columbia's Coast to Coast Network.
Middletown, an inland city of America, as typically American as scrambled eggs, the common denominator of an American big town. Population?
50,000.
Location?
West of the Alleghenies, east of the Mississippi, plumb in the middle of a plain.
Industries?
Automobile parts, wire, household furniture, and the famous glass fruit jars.
Its people?
American with a capital A. Its pillars, the home, the school, the factory, and the automobile.
Middletown, USA. The obvious can be the great truth to a trained sociologist. For in the obvious, the sociologist may find the important trends of American life. Professor Robert S. Lind and his wife Helen M. Lind of Columbia University have recorded those trends in two of the most significant documentary volumes of modern American culture, Middletown and Middletown in Transition, published by Hawkett Brace. This study is a complete history of the life of a small American city covering almost 50 years. In tonight's broadcast, we present some of the findings and some of the methods used in obtaining this record of an actual city, which these scholars have anonymously called Middletown. ...1924... The Linds call their staff together.
Well, Mrs. Lind and I have chosen the city we're to study. It's a growing town with the usual growing pains. A couple of industries, a couple of schools. Hot in summer, cold in winter, and plenty of kids.
Well, what are we supposed to find out? Whether the kids are growing or the factories are cold?
Both. Anything and everything. We're going to find out what people run the works and what people work the works. We'll find out everything. From what the kids are taught at school and church, to who borrowed Pop's car last night and what girl he was with.
What heading will that come under?
That's Mrs. Lynn's department.
I think we'll put that under using leisure time.
Yes, that's one of our categories. We've split up the research into a number of headings, and we'll divide it among you. Here are the charts.
Well, food, clothing, and mating are pretty wide topics to cover in one year. You'll notice we've broken these categories down.
That's right. These headings include about everything except the general community life. Mrs. Lind and myself will cover that.
I'll interview women, mostly.
And I'll talk to the men in the streetcars and clubs.
We live in Middletown and mix with the people. Go to parties and political rallies and labor meetings and churches.
We'll dine with the rich and eat with the poor.
And I'll go out with the boy who borrowed Pop's car.
As long as you keep it scientific. Well, here are your train tickets, everyone. We'll meet on the train. You'll be there in a few minutes now. Remember, the aim of the investigation is to study the interwoven trends that are the life of a small American city. We shall not attempt to prove any thesis. The aim will be to record observed phenomena, raise questions, suggest possible fresh points of departure in group behavior. A lot of our work may turn out to be hazy and distorted, but we can at least show the folks in all the middle towns in America what they look like. If they saw themselves clearly, maybe they would also see their mistakes.
All off for Middletown!
Middletown was once a path and a prairie that almost overnight became a city of 50,000 souls. Yankees from New England and New York came by way of the Erie Canal into northern Ohio, from the south through the Cumberland Gap into Kentucky. Down the Ohio River came Welshmen, Irish, Englishmen, and Germans. What were they seeking? Why did they come? Gas, natural gas, worth its weight in gold in 1886. The earth gives a gift to a sleepy town and startles it up to a booming city.
Hi, stranger. You can't buy land hereabouts for bottle tops. This is gas land, worth more than oil land.
But 60,000.
In solid silver dollars, not a red cent less. Why, stranger, there's enough gas here to run all the newfangled machines in the East.
Yes, but 60,000.
And it's worth more. This is the new El Dorado. There's so much gas hereabouts that once we light it, we don't bother turning it off.
Why, that's wasteful.
No, sir. We got plenty of gas. We're just economizing on matches.
And while the gas flowed, industry boomed. For a moment in industrial history, Middletown was riding on the peak. Pockets swelled and heads swelled. But eventually, with waste, the gas gave out. Most industry moved away. After the boom had subsided, Middletown began to rebuild its foundation. It grew slowly now, but solidly. Its people went around minding their own business and other people's business. They built some bungalows, a few glass factories, and painted the church, just as in your town. No more newfangled ideas, no more boom stuff, no more gadgets, until one day the automobile rolled into Middletown. Remember? Said a minister of the gospel,
automobilitis, the thing those people have who go off motoring on Sunday instead of going to church. If you want to use your car on Sunday, take it out Sunday morning and bring some shut-ins to church and Sunday school.
Said a labor leader,
as long as men have enough money to buy a second-hand Ford and a gallon of gas, they'll be out on the road and paying no attention to union meetings.
But as some growled and others eulogized the advent of the gas buggy, others swore by it. Said a woman in Middletown,
we'd rather do without clothes than give up our car. Why, I'd even go without food.
And Junior,
oh, Pa, why can't I have the car tonight? Gosh, a fella don't belong unless he's got a car.
The car, a curse and a blessing. When Professors Lind arrived in 1924, they found that Middletown citizens spent more money on automobiles than on rent and clothing. Many did not have bathtubs, but they had a car. It is the era of speakeasies and open shops, and a vote for Coolidge is a vote for your job. What were those jobs? The Linds interviewed scores of workers.
I'm a machinist, age 38. I've had this job for 15 years.
I'm a packer, age 19. I pack glass jars in Excelsior, 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, 8 to 12, 1 to 5. It's not easy.
I'm a factory laborer, age 30. I like this work. Someday I hope to get a better job, maybe foreman.
Then Professor Lynn spoke to an old-timer in a glass factory.
But it's not as tough as it used to be. You get shorter hours today.
Yeah, sure we have. We got no longer arms. You got to have a long arm these days to keep up with that blasted machine. The machine works me. I don't work the machine.
How many bottles do you turn out a day?
Well, the old days, we turned out 1,600 dozen glass jars a day by hand. Today, we turn out 6,600 dozen, and they're even better. I used to say, you never learn all there is to glass blowing, because there's always some new twist occurring to you. Today, all you got to know is how to keep up with the machine.
Then you don't have to be an expert anymore.
No. I used to be an expert glass blower. Today, I'm a first-class bottle stacker.
I see your boy works here, too.
Yeah, he does. Says he needs the money. Ain't interested in schooling. Always gallivanting about with the girls and the flivver. But not my daughter. No, sirree. She ain't coming into this plant. She's going to be a darn sight better off than her old man. She's going to get an education. Yes, sirree.
Education, the magic symbol of Middletown. For many, it took the place of any definite plans for vocation. After the boom of the early 20s, there came a period of long layoffs. 6 o'clock in the morning, and Helen Lynn walks along a typical Middletown street. She notes two kinds of homes, the dark ones where the people still sleep, the business class, and the ones with the light in the kitchen. This is a working man's home. Helen Lynn knows many of these people by now.
Good morning, Mrs. McAdams. The door was open, so I just walked in.
Oh, hello, Miss Lynn. Will you have some coffee with me before the kids get up?
Yes, thanks, I will. Mr. McAdams at work?
Looking for work. He's been out 4 weeks now. Oh, and he's awful blue. But we're going to take the car and move out of this town. Maybe there's work somewhere else.
But he's a foreman in the factory.
Yes, but he's been there 9 years and there's no chance of promotion. He's always afraid of being laid off. He wants to get back on a farm.
But this is your home.
Well, it is now, but I think we'll have to move on.
Well, good luck to you.
Thanks. I'll be needing it. But I know people worse off than we are. Maybe if more folks knew what it means to be out of a job, something could be done about it.
Professor Lynn spoke about this problem to a clubwoman. The clubwoman replied,
people come to the house a great deal and tell me they can't get work. Of course, I don't believe them. I believe that anyone who really tries can get work of some kind.
The back of the Depression is broken. Middletown rises again on the upgrade of the business curve. The automobile factories that had moved out in times of depression come back. Other industries are established, for Middletown guarantees
public confidence, the best organized city in the United States.
Remission of taxes.
Repeal of prohibition means more work in the beer bottle factories.
No union interference, contented workers, a free labor market.
Production to peak. Middletown will go over the top.
Business boom is by.
Uh-huh.
And the next day, he put his John Hancock on the dotted line for 2 carloads FOB.
Exactly what I tell my salesman. It isn't overproduction, it's under consumption. I wish you were my sales manager, Bill. How's the missus and the kid?
Never better. Willie got elected captain of the basketball team.
What do you know?
Yeah.
Say, he ought to meet my Millie. She's a swell girl, and she likes baseball.
Hey, Steve! Me! Oh,
the president. Don't he look aces?
Hello, Rotarius.
There is one asset that Middletown owns which no money can buy, and that's community spirit. You must think that there's no finer town in the whole United States than this. There's no finer school than yours. No finer opportunities anywhere than you have right here.
Right here.
You know, gentlemen, people talk of California, where there's sunshine all the year round. But I've lived in California, and give me Middle Western rain. Yes, and give me the corn. It makes grow, too. But seriously, gentlemen, I tell you, there's no lovelier place on God's footstool than this old state of ours. And no more beautiful city than Middletown.
M-I-D, C-L-Town, that's the town for me. M-I-D, C-L-E, it's no more land than sea.
Rotary Club, said the Lynns, reflect the attitudes and traditional ways of the business group of Middletown. Professor Lynn concluded,
organization, accepting labor, is found everywhere. In clubs, schools, churches, the home, and even the use of leisure time. In Middletown, there are accepted ways of thinking and of action. Such organization is encouraged by the business class. In most American small manufacturing cities, the nucleus of business and cultural life is generally controlled by a single leading family. In Middletown, it is the X family, owners of the largest industry in Middletown.
There is an X family in every American town, your town. It's the family that's been there since 18, I don't know what. The X family lives on top of the hill, the right side of the railroad tracks. They are the elite, socially and economically. Only in Middletown, more so. To understand this phenomena, the Lynns interviewed many typical citizens.
Well, that's the whole business in a nutshell. The X family runs this town. Why, in 1925, we used to have five small banks here. In 1933, at the time of the bank holiday, all those banks closed. When they opened 2 weeks later, there was a merger into one big bank and owned by Mr. X. But I ain't kicking. It saved my money.
Were you out of a job during the Depression?
No, I was lucky. You see, the X has got a big factory making glass fruit jars. People put up more fruits and vegetables in hard times than they do in good times. So we was kept pretty busy.
You must be thankful to Mr. X.
Yeah, sort of. My boy goes to the college endowed by the X's. Good basketball team there, too. It's like my wife says. The X's are just splendid. Sure, they're nice people. Friendly and democratic. But they tend to sit off by themselves. Oh, I ain't kicking, mind you. That's their business.
What business are they in?
Every business. Glass, banking, breweries, railroads. They even own a department store. If I'm out of work, I go in the X plant. When I get sick, I go to the X hospital. I buy X milk, drink X beer, vote for X, and go to the X Masonic temple. I read the news from an X newspaper. And this morning, when I lost my dog, I found him in an X pound.
The citizens of Middletown have one common interest and deep concern, and that is the care and education of their children. Says Professor Helen Lind,
in a society that looks toward the future and the next generation, a study of the way it trains its young offers one of the surest means of penetrating beneath the surface of life. Middletown cares about its children. They symbolize to the parent generation a path of release from certain of life's frustrations and the hope for the future. Here is a statistical picture of Middletown's educational system in 1936.
The ex-State University of Middletown registers more than 1,000 students.
Illiteracy in Middletown is only a little over 1%.
In 1936, the high school graduating class was the largest in history.
Our new experimental laboratory school cost $300,000 and teaches modern methods of education.
And here is the human picture of Middletown and education. We were leaving Middletown after our study, driving east along on the outskirts. A boy hailed us for a lift on the road, and we took him in.
How far are you folks going?
New York.
Oh, swell.
You going that far?
Oh, no. Just going to the next town.
Looking for work?
No, I just gone to see a friend in Toledo. Vacation time, you know. I go to a Middletown college.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I tried looking for work, but there wasn't any. So Dad thought I ought to go to college. He said I would get a job when I get better fitted for it. But I don't know.
Don't you want to go to college?
Oh, sure. Only I had other plans.
A girl?
Uh-huh. Gone with her since we were kids in the grade. Well, she's swell. Kept me bucked up when I couldn't find a job. I used to mope around, go to the library and read, and then come home for lunch. Then I'd take a spurt and start out hunting for a job. Any kind of a job. Dad kept throwing it up to me, all he's done for me. That has been a good deal. He put me through high school.
I guess your dad was right.
Oh, sure. Only I hope to get a job when I get out of college. Not the money so much, but I'd like to be a part of things, too. Dad and my girl tell me not to worry. They say everything will be okay when I get out of college. Gosh, I sure hope so.
I hope so. The quiet petition to the future of Middletown's youth. Their study of a typical American big town completed, the Linns of Columbia University write, "In these times of social turmoil, Middletown rests generally on the comforting conviction that time will cure all things. Meanwhile, they believe the middle-of-the-road policy is best." At the end of the book, Middletown in Transition, Carl Sandburg has written the most appropriate conclusion.
The people learn, unlearn, learn. A builder, a wrecker, a builder again. Precisely who and what is the people? Hope is a tattered flag and a dream out of time. Hope is an echo. Hope ties itself yonder. Yonder in the darkness, with a great bundle of grief, the people march. In the night, and overhead a shovel of stars for keeps, the people march. Where to? What next?
Universities are places of research, storehouses of knowledge. They represent your investment in a better life. Each year, American universities spend $50 million to support 30,000 research projects. Does that sound like a lot of money? Well, let's see. 30,000 research projects divided into $50 million equals only $4.50 per day per project. For this small amount, you and all mankind receive the benefits of centuries of knowledge applied to modern problems, to modern living. You are the stockholders in the libraries, the laboratories, the quiet halls of learning that are America's universities. You are the beneficiaries in the human adventure.
Next week, the human adventure will tell the story of a university, an original verse drama. Be sure to listen to this unusual broadcast about an idea that grew into an institution. So that all Americans may keep abreast of contemporary university research, the human adventure is brought to you each week over Columbia. All characters in today's broadcast were portrayed by professional actors. Scripts for the human adventure are prepared and written by the University of Chicago, and the production is directed by the staff of the Columbia Broadcasting System.